Okay, good morning. My thinking for today is, as appears here on the end of last time, which is to look at the limits of functions, and that is what I was thinking to do, and that's chapter 9. And the idea is to look at limits as we've already studied them within the real numbers in the first term of the course, and then see what modifications are needed to study functions. And it turns out that it's extremely useful, just as it is in the reals, but it's a little bit more complicated. And in fact, there turn out to be several different notions of limit, which is not true for the real. So that's kind of the biggest change, is there are several different concepts. And which have different uses. It's nice to have more than one of them. They're actually all useful. Okay, so, but to get started, let me just start with the notion of limits in the reals, and then see what modifications we need. So let me just recall. The definition, I guess it's 3.10 from last term, which says that if you have a sequence, an, and the notation, let me just note what the typical notation is. One often writes this an, and the text uses this notation. And what they mean is, another way to write it is you could put a little subscript that says, the n's, or you could write it as a1, a2, a3. So that's what it means to put the little parentheses around it. Okay, it's just that sequence is a sequence. Okay, and then we want something that is converging to. So we have a is a number. And then we look at where we're looking at this convergence, and that's in the real. So both are in R. Okay. Then the concept of a limit makes sense, and we can talk about what we have to check to see that we have the following limit. And so the way that it's written is the limit with a little arrow there as n goes to infinity, an goes to a, and let me add a superscript to the arrow because, like I said, we'll have several different concepts in functions, but there's just one in R, but let me just indicate that this is in R because we're going to take limits other places momentarily. Okay, so this is, of course, if we have our usual criterion, and that was for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists some n, so that whenever I have a little n, which is bigger than that, then we're close, okay? And by close, we mean that the distance between an and a is less than epsilon, and distance is something we understand, just the absolute value. It's straightforward. That's what's gonna change for functions, okay? All right, so that's how it worked for functions. And let me just note on the side here that there are sort of standard ways to approximate real numbers with, say, rational numbers, but there are other ways too, and often more than one of them is handy, and we'll have similar sorts of situation arising for functions. But so, for instance, if I look at e here, the irrational number e, I can write it as a limit by writing it as its decimal expansion, 7, 1, 8, 2, 8, and then the dot, dot, dot indicates that I'm taking a limit, right? So this is one way to think of it as a limit of rationals. But there are others, right? So I could also write it that, like, for instance, last time we talked about Taylor's series. If we just plug in a 1 there, then we're gonna get 1 plus 1 plus 1/2 plus 1/6 plus 1/4 factorial, et cetera. Right, so that'll give us another way to approximate and get it as a limit, the number e. And there are others, you can also write it, it's got a nice, very clean continued fraction expansion, 2/1 plus 1/2 2 plus 1/1 plus 1/2, et cetera. So there's this another way to write it as a limit of a sequence of fractions. Anyway, there are lots of ways to do it. And some are useful for some things and others for others. And we will have a similar situation for functions. Okay, so that's reals. Now I want to see how do we have to modify this to make sense for functions. Okay, so the changes for functions this way. All right, well, let me just start with what I want to do. And I left a little space here because I'm going to, comment on what we can do and what there's, as I say, choices. So, but in any case, we're going to want something like this. And so we're going to have a definition. And we're going to have now a series instead of a sequence rather of not numbers, but functions. So if we have this sequence, f sub n of x, is a sequence. And just like above, we have something that is converging to, so capital F of X, a function. Okay, and let's say that they're both in the space of functions that we're studying. So let's say the FUN, so just functions defined somewhere. So on some interval, say AB. Okay. And I'm going to give several different definitions. So one of them is going to come from definition 9.1. All right. And we'll say that the sequence here, f sub n, approaches the function f as n goes to infinity, just like above. But now I'm going to have different ways in which it approaches it, okay? So I'll have different superscripts. Let me just note up here what the possible, well, I'll start with one of them here. The first one I'm going to use is pointwise. Okay, and then I'm going to modify above. So let me just indicate which sorts of modifications make sense. So first of all, the difference here is that we have these x's, right? So that our functions have values. As long as I'm at it, let me add my example. Just so that you have something in mind. Now I'll do a fairly simple one just so that it's easy to picture. So let's take a sequence, little f sub n of x will be 2 plus 1/n times x. And I'll think of these as functions on the interval from 0 to 1, okay? So the, switch colors here. So if I take, then this capital F of X. Okay, so what is it fairly clear what limit this should have? What would be a limiting function here? I mean, there's kind of an obvious choice and it's the right choice.
It's 2x.
Exactly, right? So does everyone see that that's a reasonable choice? So I have, 2x, and these little f's are approaching that that function. Okay, so that's the kind of thing you should have in mind. But now over here, so the difference is that in when we're approaching a value in a in the reals, it's just some sequence that is approaching one number. Here, for each x, we have a different sequence, right? And so that's a problem. We have to deal with that x. And there are various ways to do it. So let me indicate right here how we might approach that. So we have for all x, in the domain here, let's say AB. Okay, but now there are two things you can do with it. There are two for alls up here. We can put it over here. We can say that we want for each X, we want the limit to work. And that's gonna be the the one that I'm defining down here point-wise. But the other thing you could say is, well, you want the limit to work, and you want it to work for every x. And that's actually different. Okay, so those are going to be two different examples that we will get. And then the other thing you can do is you can replace this concept of a distance between two things, an absolute value, with something else. So you can instead use a norm of f sub n minus f is less than epsilon for some norm . Okay, so first of all, I haven't defined norm, and I won't for a bit, but let me just indicate where it is in case you want to look it up. So that's 13.20. But I will give some examples, okay? So several possibilities, many possibilities, actually. Many possible norms could replace this notion of absolute value. And that's one of the biggest differences, again. For the numbers, for real numbers, there's just one really natural concept of absolute value. But for functions, there's lots. And that's a big difference. Okay, so let me just run through then writing out this definition precisely. So let's see, we have down here for all, and then we've decided to put x in AB right here for the point-wise, okay? And also then the rest is just exactly the same as before. So so we also have epsilon greater than zero, and then there exists some n in z. And since this can now depend on the x, right? And then we have for all n, so I'm just copying what it is up above. We have, okay, so the only thing that's different is what goes inside this absolute value bar. Is that clear? So I'm trying to get this limit to work. I have a value x here, and I'm trying to get the limit of these fn's to be capital F. What's the real number whose absolute value will matter?
Fn of x minus f, the capital F of x.
Exactly. Does everyone see that? So that's what's going to be the real number whose size we would like to be small, less than epsilon. Right. So that's the only other thing that changes from what we have up above, f sub n of x minus capital F of x. Okay. Right. So that's the notion of point-wise, let me just write down the others. So the second one is definition 9.8 in the text, and that is that our Fn approaches a capital F as n goes to infinity uniformly if, and now we just do exactly what we did above, except that we move where the quantifier for the x is to the end here, so for all n in n, and now we stick in the quantifier for the x. Okay, and then the rest is the same. So we have the same thing, f sub n of x minus capital F of x is small. Okay, but so once again, the thing to think about is that here, this choice of n can depend on x, and here we have to choose the n first, and then it has to work for all of the x's. Okay, so that's the difference there. Okay, and as I said, there's one more, and so I might as well list it, and that's definition 13.45. Okay, and it says that we have fn as n goes to infinity approaches f, and this is in norm, okay, if And again, it's going to be very much like what we had for the real numbers. So for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists capital N, an integer. For all little n, should be bigger. I'll write it here. So all little n bigger than capital N. I don't know how I got it here. There we go. Like so. Right. then we have that this norm of little f sub n minus capital F is less than epsilon. And again, there are choices. Let me just do a few examples just to get a little bit of a feel. Where F is some norm, the double bars are some norm. So it takes some functions and gives us a non-negative real number, just like the absolute value does, bigger than or equal to zero, okay? Is some norm. Okay, and as I said, let me just give some examples. So example norms . Okay, so the functions that we're going to plug in are these differences, but let me just call it just a function g, just so it's shorter. So example norms. So one is the soup norm. So if I take a function g of x, and then its soup norm is just defined to be the soup, which is why it's called the soup norm, over x in its domain, in this case, I guess that's AB, of absolute value of g of x. Okay, so that's one way to get a norm. That's one that we will use. Okay, and there's two more, just so that you can see that there's some others. So there's the L1. This one we won't use in this class, but it's extremely useful and it comes up in lots of other classes quite a bit, but it's a reminder that there are others. So this is the integral from A to B of the absolute value of g of x dx. Okay, and the one that we will use, C1, this is, and the reason really, of course, is that we're doing derivatives more than integrals. And so this is going to be the soup norm again. But then we're going to add to it the soup norm of the derivative. So we want not only our functions are getting close, but also the derivatives. Okay, so those are some examples. Let me just try those over on my functions over here, just so it's clear. And then what I'd like to do is give a whole bunch of example functions for you to try to figure out. And they're actually very useful function examples. All right, so here, let me just start with capital F. And let me look at these different norms. As I said, they're different and there's no reason for them to not be different. So if I take a capital F of X and look at its soup norm. Okay, so can anyone tell me what that is? So it amounts to tracking through this definition and figuring out what the largest value is. Let's see. Right, so this just means you take the largest absolute value that your function, so someone has it written, it's actually two. So it should be a number, it should be a real number. We should end up with a real number. And it's two, okay? Because if I look at this graph, this is my function, the largest absolute value that it takes here is this two, okay? So that's the And so I just write it equals. Okay, and let's do some one of these functions that we're taking the limit of from our sequence of what's the sup norm of f sub n of x. Is that clear? So here's a graph of f sub n of x.
Two plus one over n?
Exactly, right? It's that highest value that it reaches here is that 2 plus 1 over n, and that's the sup norm. That's right. 2 plus 1 over n. And now if we were interested in the limit and whether this approaches the limit, then the one we actually care about is the difference, right? And so finally, we would want the norm of the difference. Right, and of course, this function is just, oops, I wrote a four where I meant an n, didn't I? I apologize. Sorry, okay, yes. So so this function, of course, is 1 over n times x. Okay, so hopefully everyone's following now. So, so can everyone see then what this norm is? Yeah, exactly, 1 over n. So now this difference is a very low slope function like this, right? And the highest that it gets to is 1 over n. Okay, so that's the supernorm of the difference. And sure enough, that's going to 0. So that tells us that our sequence is approaching the capital F in supernorm. Okay, let's just try to make sure that we follow the others. So what about the... L1 norm of capital F. Let's see what that is. Right, so we have to go over here and see what L1 norm measures.
It's 1.
Correct. Okay, does everyone see that? It's measuring the area here under the curve, which in this case is a triangle, and so with area 1. Okay, so that's how we're measuring how big that function is in this case. So this is equal to 1. And similarly, if we do the functions fn, those are also triangles, and we get 1 plus 1 over 2n. Right? And then similarly, if we take the, oops, I left off the subscript sup here. Okay, sorry, that's the sup norm. And if we take this L1 norm of the difference, it's another triangle, but with smaller slope. And we get 1 over 2n. Okay, any questions about those norms? So this is the difference there, and so it's just the area of that triangle is the 1 over the 2n. Okay, and what about this last of the three norms that I wrote down, this C1 norm? If I look at capital F in this C1 norm, see how big that one is. So then we have to go back over here.
Would it be 4?
Mm-hmm. Does everyone see why it's 4? So I'm going to get a 2 from the sup norm because we already computed that one. But I'm also going to get a 2 from the sup norm of the derivative because the derivative is just the constant 2. And so the largest value it takes is 2. Okay, so you're going to get a 2 plus a 2. So this is going to be a 2 plus 2. Right. Okay, and similarly, you can compute the C1 norms of these other triangles, and again, they're going to have the property of being the same slope everywhere because they're lines, and so their maximum is the same as their value at each point. And then finally, the most useful thing is the norm of the difference. And this C1 norm is going to be a 2 over n, okay? Okay, so those are examples of norms. And remember, again, the key point here is that when I say a norm, you have to say which norm, because it depends on which norm if you want to figure out what the value is. All right. Well, any questions about that notation? Okay, so what I would like to do then is talk about examples. So let me indicate what I want to do next, and then I'm going to run through this example and just make sure it's clear. So I guess there's going to be a little time, and I'm going to try to throw you in breakout rooms and see if you can try this on a couple of these functions. But the question is going to be, so two of these are the same. Okay, and you should figure out what they are, and they're going to be the ones that we most care about. So we're going to have convergence in pointwise. Okay, and B, convergence uniform, and C, convergence in the soup norm. And then D, convergence in the C1 norm. Okay, so those are the four types of convergence we're going to talk about. And then the question is, in which intervals do each of the following converge in each of the above senses? Okay, so that's going to be our question. Okay, and let's just try it for this first example I did over here first, for this hopefully simpler example, and then I'll give some examples that you can try. So so let's start here. So all right, so let's just go through these. So actually, I guess if we're gonna do pointwise, let's do one more little computation here. So that is so when we do the pointwise computation here, this is what matters, right? Is the difference between fn at x and f at x. So let's just compute that. So the difference between f sub n at x and f at x, right? So that's going to be 1 over n times x. Okay, so now let's just try these notions of convergence. So do we have these f sub n's approach f as n goes to infinity pointwise? Okay, so is it clear what that's asking? So we have to look at each point here. We fix a point x, and then we have to see, are these values approaching that value? Or if we go over to the definition, it says that for each x, we have the usual definition of a limit of real numbers approaching, so that little f sub n of x is approaching capital F of x. So that's the question. So yes or no? Is this true? Okay, I got one answer. Other people agree? Right? So I have to look at each point x and just see whether the values of the f sub n's are approaching this value of capital F. And they are. So the answer is yes. And we can also see that from down here, right? Whenever I fix an x, as n gets big, this is going to zero. So yes. Okay, B, so what about this uniform? Okay, so we go back over here and see what does that mean. So if we look at uniform here, it says that we have to first fix the n, and then we have to check that all of those x's go to are smaller than epsilon. Okay, so if we go back over here, this is saying that we have to be able to choose our n so that this is small whichever x we choose. So is that possible?
Yes, because we can always choose a larger n.
That's right. And the way that I would say it is that, that we have a worst spot, right? Here at one, it's always the biggest place. And we can choose, as you say, a larger n so that that one's okay. And once this one is less than epsilon, well, this is less, these is even, these, all these other ones are even smaller. So this is our worst spot. And as you say, we choose an n large enough that that it works at one, and then it's actually going to work everywhere else at the same time. Okay, so you are right. That one's also true. It's also converging in that sense. Okay, so C, what about converging in supernorm? Okay, so if we look at what that means over here, so to be converging in supernorm, that means that the difference between those functions has to be small, okay? It has to have small supernorm for large n, okay? So we have to look over here at our supernorm. Oops, and so is that gonna be true here? So I claim that it is, right? And so we just have to look at this difference between these two functions and see, well, what's the supernorm of that difference? It's just the biggest difference between them, right? And that biggest difference is one over n, which is small, less than epsilon for a sufficiently large n. Okay. All right, and what about, this last one here in the C1 norm. So there we ask not only that the functions have values that are close, but so do their derivatives. Okay, so is that true of our sequence of functions? So here we saw that the values were close. And so then the other thing we have to check is that the derivatives are also getting close, the slopes. That's what that says over here. And it's also what it says here, right? When we compute this C1 norm.
It would be 1 over n plus 2 over n, which goes to 0 for sufficiently large n, or gets small.
That's exactly right. You're exactly right. For sufficiently large n, it becomes sufficiently small. That's exactly correct. Okay. So it works for all four. So in any sense that we've looked at, in actually pretty much any reasonable sense, those functions little f sub n are all converging to capital F. Okay, all right, so let me just write out a few examples. Let's see, I guess we have a little time. It maybe gives you a little time to think about a couple of them. Let's see. I'm going to write, give a whole bunch of examples. I'll give some more next time, but let me give a couple now. So number one here, I'll do them in the same order I did this morning. So this is f sub n of x is equal to x to the n. And I want to know, and you should think about it, how well that approximates capital F. So capital F is going to be one if x is bigger than or equal to one, and zero if x is less than one. Okay, so that's going to be the thing I'm trying to approximate. And then two, I'm going to take f sub n of x equals the square root of x squared plus one over n. And let me just sketch all of these. So this is supposed to be approximating the function absolute value of x. Okay, and let me just draw a little sketch here. So if I sketch these functions, what do they look like, at least between zero and one, they look kind of like this. Okay, and if I go to the next one, they're gonna look kind of like that. That'll be what my little f sub n's look like. Okay, and so three, let me take a little f sub n equals one over x plus one over n, and my capital F of x is equal to one over x. Okay, and what these look like is that we've shifted it. So we've shifted the graph of one over x to the left by one over n. So that's what those look like. Okay, let's see. What do we have here? Yeah, maybe I'll just put you into three breakout rooms and I'll add another five functions to think about while you're there. But what I would like you to do is two things. I'll give you 5 minutes. I'd like you to first figure out, well, maybe not first, but at some point think about and see if you can figure out which two of these are actually the same notions. Okay, which of these A, B, C, and D are actually the same? You might at least see that for your function. And then secondly, there'll be breakout rooms one, two, and three. And I want breakout room one to study this sequence of functions, two to study this one, and three to study that one. And then when we come back, we can try to see how those converge. And again, what I want you to study is look at intervals. And I want to say for each intervals, which ones converge in this so that they converge pointwise, so they converge uniformly, so they converge in soup norm, and so they converge in this C1 norm. Any questions about that? Okay, then I'll give you 5 minutes. Okay, let's see. I guess my rooms weren't of equal size, but all right, let's see. So what about the people in room one? Did you guys get somewhere on the relationship between this sequence of functions f sub n of x and capital F? Okay, so the first question would be in the pointwise convergence. So at what points does this function approach this one? You guys come up with a guess? Okay, so remember what the goal here is. We want this pointwise convergence. So we want to look at for each point x, we want to know whether this sequence, powers of x, are approaching either 1 or 0. So that our function here is getting closer to the values of either 0 or 1. Okay, let's see. So maybe we can try another one. So what about number two? Did anyone get anywhere on number two? So here we're trying to, this was a smaller room, but you two figure out whether at each point or which points this function was approaching the other one? Oh, okay, all right. Well, let's start there then. So did people have some ideas about which two were equivalent, or at least just, or I mean, I guess any two that were not equivalent would also be sufficient, but would be a start. But anyway, did you get some ideas about which two are equivalent here? That's correct. Yes, that is correct. The supernorm and the uniform are in fact equivalent. So in other words, if we look at if we look at this example, the supernorm is telling us that we want the maximum of the difference to be bounded by epsilon. That's the supernorm. And the uniform says that we want the worst one to be bounded. So they turn out to be the same. That's right, exactly. You summarized it correctly. Yeah, exactly. If the soup is smaller than something, then in particular it's smaller than something for everything. That's exactly right. So those two are equivalent. Okay. Right. Okay, and so that's a very good thing to try to run through and prove if you didn't figure that out already for the rest of you. So all right, and let's see. And what about the third group? Did you guys get somewhere on your sequence of functions?
I'm not sure how correct it is, but I think we concluded that it would probably be pointwise.
Okay.
Just because for sufficiently large n, the graph should, or the graph of fn of x should approach big f of x. The only thing that I worry about is that no matter what, for fn of x, the mm-hmm. max is always going to be n, like the supremum or mm-hmm. whatever is going to be n. But for big f of x, the max is always just going to go to infinity.
That's right. And that's a very good worry. And so, and let's see what, in fact, that has. So you're right that for each point, let's say for every positive value, you're going to get that it approaches it, just as you said. Okay, so that's where it converges pointwise. But like you said, there's a uniformity issue because just as you said, the sup here is infinite, but the sup here is nice bounded finite thing, n, right? Just as you said. So that means that this the norm of their difference is going to be infinite if we allow it to go to zero. So to get a uniform bound, what we have to do is stop before we get to zero.
So would it be correct to say that it's pointwise, but not uniform, not sup norm, and not, what is that, C1 norm?
C1 norm, yes, that would be correct. For that's right, that's correct. And if you wanted to get it even more refined, that's correct if you take the whole interval of positive numbers. But if you chop it off so that you avoid zero, then it converges in the sup norm also.
We would have to not only like exclude zero, but also like a distance away from zero, right? We couldn't just like square bracket zero.
That's exactly correct. You have to actually move away from zero some finite amount. That's exactly right. And then it'll be convergent in these other two senses, but only after you, so not. Yeah, when you sidle up towards zero, that's right. Okay. Anyway, so you can keep thinking about it around time. And next time, I've listed a whole bunch more that we didn't get a chance to talk about at all, but I wrote pictures for them. And these are all great examples to keep in mind, because it's good to have a litany of examples to throw things against. And we will go through these next time. Anyway, I'm out of time, so I will stop the recording, but I'll stick around to answer questions.